there was a civilization, much like ours, but with a greater intelligence, greater powers, and a greater capacity for good.
Even though you've been raised as a human being, you are not one of them.
Water, but she said the coasts were like 15, 25 miles in. She said the state of Michigan's coasts were pretty much gone. And by Lake Erie, that was gone. And then she said Florida, Cuba, and Bahama Islands were gone. Aleutian Islands were gone. And the tip of Chile and Argentina, the southern tip, was gone. And so she went back there to look at the maps again. And then later on that day, they had a meeting. There were civilians and Air Force generals, Navy admirals in there. Well, she trusted me, you know, and I told her, because I was in the United States Marine Corps, I had a secret security clearance, so I was an embassy Marine, you know, and I told her I'd be quiet about it, and then, you know, when I heard John Moore talking about this stuff, I had to get consent from her. I said, would it be okay if I could talk about this? And she said, as long as I don't give her name or give too much that would connect her, because she does work for the National Weather Service. Okay, she said that the coastlines like Lake Superior, like northern Wisconsin, Upper Peninsula, you know, the UP of Michigan, that was pretty much like, it looked like to her like maybe it's 10, 15 miles inland of coast that was underwater. And if you draw a line all the way down, she said that Door County, that's the county, that's the thumb that sticks out between Green Bay and Lake Michigan. She said that was gone, and then if you draw a line just the east coast of Wisconsin, that was pretty much gone underwater. Say the shores of Lake Michigan, you know, Lake along Milwaukee and all that was pretty much gone. When I asked her when this thing was going to happen, she said, this is 1997. You know, I still see her, by the way. I saw her last summer, and I keep contact with her. Back in the 90s, I was told about this stuff. A female Air Force officer, she's a weather officer. She was stationed with the headquarters of the U.S. Space Command, Peterson Air Force Base, Colorado Springs, Colorado. She worked for the Global Space Operations Division, the Weather Operations Branch. When we had a cookout, we became good friends. Her husband's from Wisconsin. During the summer of 97, I started hearing this stuff about global warming, and I just got out of the blue, asked her, what's this global warming stuff? And she says, well, just promise don't tell anybody, but it's classified. And she said that this information was given to her about this stuff. And what we're talking about now. And she says one morning at the conference room, she didn't attend this conference room. She saw rows of chairs. She saw a projector screen and overhead projector, you know, by the rows of chairs. She saw a world map and United States map, but they didn't look like a map in the world atlas. And the first thing she did look at was the United States map. She looked at Wisconsin because her husband's from there. And it wasn't all underwater, but she said the coasts were like 15, 25 miles in. She said the state of Michigan's coasts were pretty much gone. And then by Lake Erie, that was gone. And then she said Florida, Cuba, and Bahama Islands were gone. Aleutian Islands were gone. And the tip of Chile and Argentina, the southern tip, was gone. And so she went back there to look at the maps again, and then later on that day they had a meeting. There were civilians and Air Force generals, Navy admirals in there. Well, she trusted me, you know, and I told her, because I was in the United States Marine Corps, I had a secret security clearance. I was an embassy Marine, you know, and I told her I'd be quiet about it. And then, you know, when I heard John Moore talking about this stuff, I had to get consent from her. I said, would it be okay if I could talk about this? And she said, as long as I don't give her name or give too much that would connect her, because she does work for the National Weather Service. Okay, she said that at the coastlines, like Lake Superior, like northern Wisconsin, Upper Peninsula, you know, the UP of Michigan, that was pretty much like, it looked like to her like maybe it's 10, 15 miles inland of coast that was underwater. And if you draw a line all the way down, she says that Door County, that's the county, that's the thumb that sticks out between Green Bay and Lake Michigan. She said that was gone, and then if you draw a line just the east coast of Wisconsin, that was pretty much gone underwater. Say the shores of Lake Michigan, you know, Lake along Milwaukee and all that was pretty much gone. When I asked her when this thing was going to happen, and she said, this is 1997. You know, I still see her, by the way. I saw her last summer, and I keep contact with her. She said in 1997, she says between 10, 15 years time frame. So we're past 2007, so you know the years are counting down. She says in that range, she says between 10, 15 years. If people don't believe what we're talking about, the Washington Times, Sunday, April 19, 2009, people can Google this, whatever, climate refugees in Pacific flee rising sea. And as we're speaking about Wisconsin, 2009, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, good gains for a Great Lake. They said after near record lows, Lake Michigan's water level rises nearly 2 feet.
Well, hello, folks. Welcome to the Light of Day, coming to you live from the Sonora Desert in Tucson, Arizona, on Saturday night, April 10th, 2010. I was just playing a soundbite there of my friend John up in Milwaukee, who has a source that used to be in the Air Force. She was, I believe, a meteorologist there, and she conveyed this information to him about about these classified maps of what North America would look like someday, and John actually got a map from this lady today. We'll be talking about that probably more next week. Sorry about the difficulties here going on air, but I found out that my mixer board wasn't totally plugged into the wall outlet, so I pinpointed that down. We're going to be having John DiNardo on tonight from New Jersey. He's a regular guest on the John Moore Show. He's a Planet X researcher. And and I believe he's calling in right now.
Hello.
Hello, you there, John? Anyway, I'll keep reading the bio here again. Anyway, John, having been educated and experienced in Marine Corps aviation electronics, he performed industrial electronic circuit troubleshooting, fault analysis, and the design of electronic circuitry, serving with numerous corporations, including Bendix Avionics and Dynalco Corporation in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and with McGraw-Edison Corporation and Industrial Timer Corporation, both in New Jersey. Then John served for 20 years as an electrical engineer and designer of electronic circuitry with Bell Telephone Labs in Whippany, New Jersey. Completed his career as an electrical engineer and circuit designer with Mobile Vision Corporation, the nation's leading manufacturer of police car video systems. Selected as a member of Kappa Delta PI, National Scholastic Honor Society. Military electrical and electronic schooling plus education in college mathematics and physics have given him the knowledge of electricity and magnetism necessary to understand the nature of our electric solar system. So I'm back to the screen here. And anyway, John, I guess I'm just going to have to read an article here. I mean, we just can't have dead air silence when I'm trying to do my show. This just figures. I've seen this come across the wires Thursday, April 8th, which would have been 2 days ago. Cape Canaveral, Florida. NASA fleshed out plans on Thursday for a revamped U.S. space program that will focus initially on developing technology needed to send people to Mars. The new program also aims to promote the development of commercial space taxi services and to ring the planet with satellites to monitor climate change. Now, that really stuck out at me. That's indicating to me that NASA may in actuality be monitoring the incoming interactions of this cosmic event, whatever that may be, with our planet and the sun. It's here they're going to be ringing the planet now with satellites to monitor climate change. This was put out 2 days ago. I get a message on the Skype here. It says my microphone is really quiet. Well, all my levels are up where they're supposed to be. I don't know. The Skype is telling me my microphone is too quiet. Hello, John. If you're out there, please try to call back in. I'm waiting for your call. I see someone's trying to call me now from a 973 area code. I'm not sure if that's John or not, but every time I hit the answer, there's nobody there. So I'm pretty baffled by how I needed to bring this my caller in here. Well, this just figures I had a really good guest lined up here for tonight, and for some reason I can't get this guy to come in. Anyway, the NASA plans come as NASA prepares to end its space shuttle program later this year, which is expected to cost hundreds of contracting jobs tied to the space program. NASA officials said work on the new program would be spread out across the agency's 10 field centers, with the Johnson Space Center in Houston taking responsibility for a $6 billion five-year program to oversee technology demonstrations. The Kennedy Space Center in Florida will be in charge of a $5.8 billion five-year effort to help private companies develop orbital transportation services. Centers in Maryland, California, and Ohio will manage an expanded Earth observation campaign to keep tabs on climate change and its impact. I actually got in Dr. Bill Deagle's show here when John Moore was a guest yesterday and mentioned this thing about NASA being prioritizing climate change now after the shuttles stopped flying. I personally really think that what they're going to be doing is monitoring the interactions of this Planet X-type object or whatever cosmic event which is ensuing and how it's interacting with the Earth and the Sun. And I also think this is why NASA's been sending up so many spacecraft to look at the Sun lately, because they're obviously expecting some massive-type activity to be occurring there soon. Oh, boy. I wish I knew how to do this better, folks. I guess I should have just called him and brought him in on the... what I think I'm going to do here at the bottom of the hour break is I'm going to... Well, no, I don't have my phone hooked up to bring him in through my broadcast host, so... Oh, boy. John, if you're out there, can you please try to call back again? I'm trying to figure this out. Anyway, back to the article on NASA. This is step one, to identify programs that are going to be funded by this budget, NASA Administrator Charlie Bolden said during a conference call with reporters. President Obama has proposed adding $2 billion to NASA's $18 billion yearly budget for the year beginning October 1st, an increase that Bolden said should result in more jobs. There's the music, folks. We'll be back. We'll be back. Hang on.
Guaranteed. You're listening to the Orion Talk Radio Network. This is Micro 1650 AM, a 100 milliwatt Part 15 broadcaster. No matter what your political ideology, it should be clear that the mainstream media simply doesn't give you the whole story. These days, if you want the truth, you have to know where to find it. Well, you found it right here on Micro 1650 AM. We've partnered with some of the best alternative news sources in the business, RBN, the IRN USA Network, Oracle Broadcasting, Liberty News Radio, Accent Radio, and The Micro Effect. These networks offer intelligent, informative, and thought-provoking programming that will open your eyes to what's really going on. Your comments and questions about the programming are always welcome. Contact us at micro1650am@gmail.com. That's micro1650am@gmail.com. You can listen online and find out more about us at micro1650am.com. Enjoy the show.
Folks, welcome back to the Light of Day, coming to you live from the Sonora Desert in Tucson, Arizona. Yeah, I've been having quite a field day here with the Skype. I do have my guest online now, though, and I read your bio there, John. Are you there?
Yes, I am, Sheldon.
Yeah, well, welcome to the Light of Day show. Well, I'd like for you to tell my audience about what are your thoughts about all these ensuing earthquakes that we've been having lately to start off with?
Well, it just increases my certainty that this Planet X, this massive celestial object on a cometary course, is indeed approaching. The evidence is just mountainous. The evidence comes from just so many fields of study, that we could spend months and months just describing it all, unveiling all the information. And now that we see it happening, it becomes very, very, well, yeah, there's mixed emotions, excitement, fear, and also trust in the Lord God, because we know these events are actually happening. What we've talked about, what people have talked about for years, is now beginning to come to pass. There's absolutely no doubt whatsoever. Anyone who would even doubt it would have to be completely ignorant or in denial.
Well, John, the $64 million question I have is, I'm very open to the idea that Planet X is headed our way, but I'm also aware that the powers to be, they, in accordance to the research that Dr. Judy Wood has done in the 9/11, that with these directed energy weapons and other black ops technology that the powers to be have, they can turn our planet into another asteroid belt with the technology that they already have. So How will we really ever be able to know in the end or prove if it was a cosmic event or if it was, you know, the elite carrying it off? How would we know?
Well, you know, it is confusing, and I think there's a spiritual explanation to this, and that is Satan wants to mimic God. He wants to take the place of God, the Savior. And indeed, Satan controls the powers of this world, the men who hold all the power and high technology, and they do have scalar weapons. They have the ability to use Tesla technology to create earthquakes and to create openings in the ionosphere and to steer hurricanes. We know they've done it in the past. But what you'll know when you see the events become so monumental, so great, the Earth changes, the Earth disasters, you'll know that it's coming from God, that no man could create it all. And another way you'll know it, excuse me, is when you see the power elite going underground. In fact, you know it already, because we have absolute proof from Governor Jesse Ventura, his television program on True TV titled Apocalypse 2012, in which he went underground to Cheyenne Mountain, underneath and around the Denver, Colorado airport, and showed scenes of this underground city, and spoke with Chief of Security, Colonel Wynn, who told us that when these huge, massive doors, steel doors, are closed shut, nobody's going to be able to come in. And the evidence was absolutely, you know, very, very stark and indisputable when Jesse Ventura went underground and viewed all of this. So we know the power elite going underground. They can't be underground hiding while they're creating earthquakes, I don't think. And they wouldn't do that.
They wouldn't do that.
Because the worst place to be when an earthquake occurs is underground. So they're not going to kill themselves. You'll see massive earthquakes. But the reason they're going underground, I know it doesn't make sense from an earthquake point of view, but the reason they're going underground is because of the solar scorching that will occur probably first or in concurrent in the, concurrently with the earthquakes. They have no choice. When the earth begins to burn, they've got to get underground at least for a period of time. So that's how you'll know. That's how you know that it's being created by God and not by man, because the events will become so devastating. And then we have evidence, too, from the past. There's another way to know that it's created by God and not by man, and that is we have testimony, ancient history, that's been dug up on cuneiform tablets by the British Museum of Archaeology. The British Museum of Archaeology, I believe, is the correct title of it. This organization, the most highly reputed museum in England. They've done archaeological digs and have discovered clay tablets, cuneiform tablets, with the ancient Sumerian language. And Zechariah Sitchin, the famed archaeologist and scholar, is one of the few people who can read these tablets. And we have evidence of the past from scholars that there was massive disasters exactly as we're about to see now, occurring in ancient Egypt back around the year 1500 BC. In fact,
But John?
Yes.
Oh, I'd like to interject by stating, what kind of a loving God is that to cause all this destruction? I can see the elite carrying this out, specifically. I think the U.S. Navy would be involved in it. Well, that part bothers me. What kind of a loving God would want to, cause a life-extinguishing event of this kind?
What kind of loving God who would actually suffer death and suffer hell, separation from God himself in order to save us, to plead with us, to beg with us, to call upon us for hundreds and hundreds and thousands of years, in fact, to turn our minds and our hearts to him, our Creator, because he's a perfect judge. In order to maintain his perfection, he has to judge evil or sin perfectly. He cannot bend the rules, even for the children whom he loves or whom he created. So what he did was he suffered himself that pain and suffering, and he said when he went to the cross that if you people don't cry for me, cry for yourselves, those of you who will not come to faith. Don't cry for me going to the cross, but because if you don't have faith now when I've come down and given everything for you, then how will you have faith when there's an absence of the Word of God and things become very dark? And he was talking about this day and age. So that's what it was.
John?
He has to judge perfectly. But he's going to save some. That's the whole thing. Now, you and I have an opportunity to be unscathed, to come out of this without being harmed whatsoever. And he will do that for you.
Well, I believe that even if the U.S. Navy or some black ops group is behind all this in the end, I do believe that our Creator will protect those that he does want to protect. I do agree with you on that part. I'd also like to add this. Have you ever heard of a researcher named Ralph Epperson?
Yes, many years ago.
Yeah, well,
Yes, he's been around for a long time.
Yeah, he lives here in Tucson where I live, and I sometimes call him up. We got to talking about Planet X the other day on the phone, and he said that, like, maybe middle of last year that this thing was supposed to be out by Jupiter, and according to me and you, it's still out near Jupiter. What has taken so long for this thing to get here?
So this was last year that Ralph Epperson said it was near Jupiter?
Yeah, he heard or read about it somewhere that this thing was out by Jupiter, and he said, well, if this thing is really coming, well, it should only be like 7 miles away from the Earth right now. And even Marshall Masters has stated that, you know, this is a fast mover. What's taking it so long?
Well, you have to understand the distances that are involved here. And incidentally, I agree that that back around 2009, in fact, he might have read my essay. I thought I was the only one that had theorized that Planet X was below Jupiter around 2008-2009. I wrote a whole essay on it. I could send it to you. But I hope he had gotten that from a different source, that same information, that would seem to add credence to that theory, that it was below Jupiter around 2009 because there was a huge comet collision into the southern hemisphere of Jupiter, and we know that Planet X was coming in from below our circular table, which we call the ecliptic plane. It's an invisible disk of space surrounding the sun horizontally, about which all of the planets revolve around the sun. So if Planet X was coming in from below that ecliptic, that circular table, so to speak, then if Jupiter happened to be right above it at the time it was coming through, if it was crossing below Jupiter's path, then that would explain why there would be a huge comet collision into the southern hemisphere of Jupiter, and also it would explain why, this is a very telling sign, why the sun mysteriously and suddenly went very quiet. With an absence of solar flares, it went into unprecedented quiescence from 2008 through 2009. There's no other explanation for it except that Jupiter was drawing the electrostatic and electromagnetic discharges from Planet X from below and diverting that electrical fire away from the sun. And that's why the sun became quiet.
Yeah, now, I'd like to interject, John.
Yes.
Yeah, I'd like to interject by stating I follow Professor Jim McCanney's work. You're familiar with him, of course, aren't you?
Yes, I haven't been listening to him recently, but I'm familiar with his past.
Well, boy, you can sure learn a lot from this guy. He claims that as celestial objects come in, they tend to discharge the sun, which acts like a giant solar capacitor, and that definitely makes sense with what you're saying. I know that NASA is also sending an extraordinary number of spacecraft to look at the sun right now, so they're obviously watching something around the sun right now.
You're right. I mean, they have been launching many spacecraft, and some of these are probably observatories. Incidentally, the Chandra X-ray Observatory satellite recently, I think about 4 months ago, actually sighted Planet X with its X-ray telescopes, and it's been sort of covered up. They had to make some kind of an announcement, so they made some kind of a weak, feeble announcement stating that they had seen some kind of a comet, but they didn't know what it was. So we know that that's what it was, and also the South Pole Telescope has sighted it back around 2008. Marshall Masters had reported that. But getting back to your question about why is it taking so long, you know, there's a great distance. I can't remember how many astronomical units away Jupiter is from Earth. But you could figure, let's say that, you know, it looks very likely, plausible, that Planet X was below Jupiter's orbit in the middle of 2009. When we saw that comet collision into the southern hemisphere. So now here we are less than a year later, and, if it were getting, I would expect that the Planet X would be below the asteroid belt right now, which is the next orbital body path in from Jupiter. Then next comes Mars. As you come closer in, next comes Mars. I would expect that Planet X is passing closer in from the asteroid, below the asteroid belt, and coming toward below Mars. And there, in fact, incidentally, there was an article that was put out by Sky and Telescope, and it was republished by biblicalastronomy.com, I believe. They mentioned that there was a strange cometary object that was discovered in the asteroid belt. That would probably not be Planet X, but it would be one of Planet X's sort of in, captured bodies that it holds in its gravitational grip. So there's
a
clue that it's getting closer, and it'll be here soon, believe me. The way we know acceleration, how acceleration works, the speed just increases exponentially when two gravitationally attracting bodies get closer and closer. You know, if the distance is cut in half between the two bodies, that is planet X and the Sun, when that distance becomes cut in half, then what the attracting force becomes four times greater. And so on. So it's an exponential increase in attracting force, and when that attracting force increases, the acceleration of one body to the other increases proportionally to the attracting force. So that acceleration also increases exponentially.
Hey, John.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'd like to add by asking you, what do you think about this NASA contract that I've come across that indicates that NASA started relocating their own people, and they only had until September of last year to get their people ready to the underground shelters, but that contract could be extended up to 3 more years if so desired. I'm doing a FOIA request on that, and I got a reply back a few days ago that now it's undergoing legal review, but it's just about ready to be released to me. So there's just another indication that one of the major corporations, NASA, Never a Straight Answer, is getting ready for something.
Well, I didn't even know that. I'm glad you told me that. I knew from John Moore's reports that the Environmental Protection Agency and the CIA had moved from the Virginia around the East Coast to Denver, the Denver area. But I did not know that NASA was moving. Now, NASA is located in Texas around the Houston area, right? And also in Florida.
Well, their corporate is in Washington, D.C., but they fly at the Kennedy Space Center in Florida.
Mm-hmm. And then JPL is in Houston. I think they're down there, too. So those are all low areas that are very vulnerable to flooding. Close to the coast and very low.
Well, yeah, most of these facilities are very, just right above sea level. So they're at risk. And here, I wanted to add that 2 days ago, NASA puts out that as part of their post-space shuttle era plans, they're going to be ringing the planet with satellites to monitor climate change. And I got to thinking about this. Well, maybe what they're really going to be doing is monitoring the interaction of the Planet X-type object with the Earth and Sun. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I mean, certainly it's involved something to do with the comets that are coming in, the comets that are surrounding Planet X, and all the hyperactivity of the Sun. I don't know precisely what the purpose is, but we know it's not going to be. It's going to be to try to deal with the problem of Planet X and all the solar winds and other disastrous events that are going to occur. The satellites would probably be for monitoring. But, you know, I don't know much about NASA. In fact, nobody really knows. Everything is kept so secret, and it's a shame because we feel like we're incompetent when we talk about what NASA is doing. It's only because they're so secretive. We have, like, a police state in this country, as you know, throughout the government, and NASA is no exception. In fact, NASA, because of Planet X, NASA is probably the most secretive organization alongside the CIA that we have in the government. So we can only speculate, but you're right. I mean, just by knowing all those satellites are going up, and then you hear about all these other launches that are occurring right now, and they give you these excuses as to, you know, what they're for. We know. We don't have to know the actual truth or the details. We just know that things are getting hot, and they're scurrying to try to deal with it as best they can. There's a lot of evidence, though.
Well, I would like to add, John. Sorry. I'd like to add that NASA spent $74 million on this contract to start relocating their own people. And this is three times more than what the CIA's domestic division spent to move their people out to Denver.
Well, it's very obvious, isn't it, that things are real? I mean, you're right. The evidence is becoming so glaring that things are about to happen, that there's going to be disasters. They want to get away from the coastal areas. They're moving their people. And they can't hide something like that. So they have to just basically, you know, do it and depend upon the stupidity and the apathy of the American people. They just keep it. They don't publicize it. But, you know, people like you and I can find that information easily. So it's all very conclusive that things are about to get very bad very soon. I wouldn't be worrying too much about it, when's it coming, because, you know, as I said, we got a great distance between Jupiter and Earth. But just remember, acceleration, a few basic principles of physics are that when two bodies gravitationally attracted get closer together, their acceleration does not increase linearly as the distance decreases. Their acceleration increases exponentially. And moreover, velocity, the velocity of those two attracting bodies increases exponential to acceleration. So what we're talking about is an exponential, immensely, tremendously exponential increase in the velocity of Planet X and its surrounding comets as it gets closer. So it's like you can compare it to the cartoons, the Roadrunner cartoons, where the big 18-wheeler truck is coming down the highway on a flat desert highway, and you're looking at it, looks like a tiny little speck in the distance, and then all of a sudden it just comes down on you and it just bears down on you with like a comet coming out of the sky. Well, that's how the events are going to ramp up here, as we see them pretty soon now. We're seeing evidence of that with these tremendous earthquakes. Go ahead.
I guess there's some kind of the delay here, because when I say something, you're not hearing me right away or something, but oh well.
No,
I'd like to add that, keep in mind, folks out there, that a celestial body doesn't have to hit the Earth for major cataclysm to occur. Professor McCanny calls it action at a distance, so I just wanted to, you know, keep that in mind as well.
That term, action at a distance, is a very common term used in physics. It's been around for at least 100 years. You can find it in just about any physics textbook, action at a distance. And that's absolutely true. And it's something we've all seen in our lives, where, for example, if you take a magnet and a piece of iron and put the magnet next to the piece of iron, there will be a magnetic attraction. And it doesn't have to touch to have a magnetic pull on the piece of iron. Similarly, gravity works in the same manner. You don't have to have a collision, a physical contact. It's just a gravitational pull between that passing space body and planet Earth. And it's like taking, for example, a raw egg. And Earth can, you know, may be likened to a raw egg, in that the shell of the egg is very thin compared to the rest of the molten portion within the egg. Likewise, the crust of the Earth is very thin in comparison to the remainder of the inner core of the Earth. The shell can crack easily. In fact, the shell of the Earth has cracked many times. There are 12 tectonic plates that engulf and encircle the Earth. And these plates shift around. It's like I compare it to pineapple slices floating on a bed of Jell-O. And if you're carrying this tray of Jell-O with pineapple slices floating on top, and somebody jostles your elbow, bumps you in the elbow, those pineapple slices are going to slosh back and forth and butt up against one another. Well, that's what the tectonic plates of the Earth are like.
Right, and we also see it. And we also see it with the tides that are created by the moon on a daily basis. Hey, I wanted to let you know we only got less than 3 minutes left in the show here. I only do a 1 hour show, but I did want folks to know that I'm archiving John DiNardo's
I had so much evidence I wanted to give you. I guess we won't have time. but go ahead.
No, I really enjoyed having you as a guest, and I'd like you to be a regular guest on my show. We could talk about it some other time. I did want folks out there to know that I'm archiving John DiNardo's broadcast that he airs on, I believe it's WWRG. Is that correct, John?
Yes, that's right. WWRB, that's 3185 shortwave, 3185 shortwave, 10 p.m. Eastern, Sunday.
Well, that's the end of the show, John. Thanks for hanging in there, and we'll have you back sometime. Take care.
Well, thank you, Sheldon. Good night.
Thanks, John.